casting this intergenerational portrait, it was my dream to really cast an actual family in these roles. Working with Muhammad was just amazing. I mean, he's so disciplined, he's so rigorous, he's so committed. He has more integrity than anyone I've ever met. And he just was so there and present and you know, the kind of actor who, you know, I would call cut and he would say, no, let's do it again. Let's do it again. I can do better. Just always really striving to kind of be his best. And you can see that in his work and the immense depth and nuance and humanity and humor that he brings to the film. You know, I'm so happy that he actually got to tap into that, that talent of his, because, you know, he hadn't gotten to do a lot of comedy. He did come to our European premiere where he saw the film for the very first time this summer, and he just was so proud of the film.
Well, we're going to continue this conversation. We want folks to go to democracynow.org to see it. Shireen Diabas, Palestinian-American director, producer, screenwriter, actress. Her feature film, All That's Left of You, has been shortlisted for an Oscar. It's opening around the country. It's in New York, Los Angeles, and San Francisco now. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
New year, new KBOO. Thank you to everyone who contributed and supported us during our KBOO Fights Back end of year campaign. With help from our community, we exceeded our $75,000 goal and will be able to continue bringing you grassroots independent community radio.
Hola, soy Ruth Parra y te invitamos que nos sintonices cada martes en Tonali de 2:30 a 4 de la tarde.
Soy Brenda Escobar y les traeremos entrevistas relevantes de nuestra comunidad.
Soy Victoria Hernández y junto a Edith Molina estaremos analizando nuestro próximo tema.
Nos puedes sintonizar en kboo.fm.
O pueden encontrarnos en Facebook buscando Radio Tonali.
Nuestro correo electrónico es kbootonali@yahoo.com.
Good morning, listeners. You're listening to KBOO 90.7. It's 8 o'clock. The bell is rung. You're in the studio with the Genius Box, which is today myself alone in the studio, but not alone on the radio. We have a special guest caller calling in from afar, from her own Genius Box that's currently a box on my Zoom screen. Who is with me?
Hello, it's Althea. Reed, you didn't introduce yourself, you silly.
Did I not say my name?
No, you didn't say your own name.
Well, that's because much like a ghost, I have to be called upon into the Genius Box.
Sure.
No, my name's Reed. I'm sorry. I'm not used to introductions.
And no, I did make you do it this week.
And I go without, it goes without saying that it is me.
Right, you're sort of a known entity at this point. How are you doing? I'm excited to get to talk today. We have a lot of really fun stuff planned for the show, so people should stick around.
Yeah, you should definitely stick around even after my disastrous start to the show.
It wasn't disastrous, I think it was fine.
Oh, thank you. I'm feeling better now because I was complimented. That was kind of a compliment, not much of a sandwich because I wasn't really a compliment before the initial criticism. So I'm going to call it like a compliment open face sandwich with a little criticism bread underneath.
Okay. Love that. We have some stuff planned for today. I wanted to go over a little bit of what we're going to talk about. Portland got a new city council president a week later than we thought we would, but we did get one.
Woo.
There's something of a tech scandal that we're going to go over. There's a study from Rose City Reform. All of this is city council related. Then we've got some special new content for you, including something we're calling Out of the Box, where Reed and I attended Major League Table Tennis, and I edited a little thing for you to hear how that went. And we'll be taking calls later in the show on cliches.
Okay.
And it's a little cliche because this is a call-in show that we'll be taking calls on that, but we have that to look forward to.
Point of order, can we never call what we do content ever again? I think it's me lashing out after the failure to introduce myself. Content just, I just have such a visceral reaction to it.
It has a bad feeling attached, I get that.
But we do have new content. Exciting new content, listeners.
Exciting things to talk about. Okay, let's get into it. Are you good with that?
Yeah, whatever.
Okay, great. I'm glad you're on board. So, Councillor Jamie Dunphy is our new council president.
President Whoa. Dunphy.
After 13 rounds of voting, the
Hooray.
Ultimate compromise candidate. This was three whole... I haven't tabulated the hours mentally, but it was all of last Wednesday. It was like 8 hours last Wednesday, 2 hours Thursday, then they got interrupted, and then it was like 6 hours this Wednesday that they spent on this. What a journey, what a marathon, really.
And all it took was every single person that wanted to be city council president stepping out of the race.
Yeah, I wrote some headlines just to sort of capture the spirit of the thing
because,
course, like 16 hours of debate is not for the faint of heart. You have to be a real freak to want to listen to all of that. Luckily, you've got one right here on the radio who did listen to all of it. The one that I wrote about that aspect was, maybe we should cut the baby in half, how the two city councilors who actually wanted to be president were sidelined by the most reluctant compromise candidate.
Kind of, not really a succinct title, but quippy.
Well, this is the radio. If you don't let me quip, what do I have?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
But yeah, it was tied between Ilana Protoguinea and Samir Canal for multiple days, and... what we ended up with was Councillor Jamie Dunphy, who didn't want to do it and was very clear that he didn't want to do it.
Sometimes you have to, the elder statesman has to step into the role.
I don't think he's elder statesman of anybody on that council.
No, actually isn't.
Elder in temperament. I guess in the sense that he's like kind of jaded. I don't know. I mean, Dunphy will probably do a fine job. It did make me a little bit sad that the two people who actually wanted to do the job weren't able or like couldn't get it together to do so. It's like, that's just kind of a bummer.
It's kind of classic class president dynamic, where it's like you have like the you know, the strivers, and then you have like the cool kid who's like, I don't even want this position.
You think he was negging them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, the dark sunglasses and the leather jacket.
Whatever. What are we running for again?
Oh, I guess if you guys want me to be in charge, it doesn't matter to me. Can I read you some of the other headlines that I wrote?
Yes, please, please, please.
Okay, here we go. Wrangling cats and beating dead horses: how Portland City Council selected their next president.
Ooh.
Of course, this took a long time. I think maybe hours and hours of debate makes people delirious. Olivia Clark was worried that saying beating a dead horse was politically incorrect, but then she kept saying it over and over and over. and then Dunphy.
That's an awesome
like,
way to make your point.
Yeah, exactly.
Is this wrong?
I don't know. I don't want to be politically incorrect, but to beat a dead horse. And Dunphy was saying that he didn't want to be wrangling cats. He was like, I don't want to be doing all of these things, you know. Making that case that he didn't want to hurt. I think it's herding cats, but I think he did say wrangling cats.
Okay, well, it depends on how you wrangle cats, is if you hurt them. Because, like, if you get, like, a little, maybe you make a little lace, a little, like, a lasso out of lace, and
right.
you just kind of deftly loop it around their body.
I said herding with a D.
Well, I choose to believe, because this is an auditory medium, I get to choose to believe what I hear.
Right. I guess it's my fault for not enunciating.
Mm-hmm.
I got a couple more headlines to tell you about. This is another one I wrote. Cutting off your nose to spite your face.
I like that
Portland
one.
City Council weighs suing itself to end gridlock. This was a wild sort of plot point this week where Councillor Loretta Smith tried to get a vote to stop discussion, to like put hang everything in the balance, to get a judge to weigh in, or I mean, in her view, to reject the city attorney's opinion that the mayor can't tiebreak on the council president role. And everybody who was responding in this sort of discussion had this really incredulous tone. And you want us to sue this, you want to use someone's council budget to sue the city over the city's opinion that the mayor is not allowed to tiebreak on this vote.
Can you explain that, like why Loretta Smith was so adamant on that?
Right. So they were locked 6-6
right.
for round after round of voting. And even after Smith herself and Novick entered the race, there was maybe a 6-5-1, but you have to get 7 votes to become the council president.
Mm-hmm.
And on other types of votes, the mayor can be a tiebreaker. But of course, this time last year, Portland City Council was deadlocked 9 rounds on who should become president. And Smith at that time also tried to take a vote to reject the city attorney's take that the mayor is like not allowed to tiebreak on this particular vote. The mayor's tiebreaking role actually hasn't come into play, and we'll talk a little bit more about the statistics of this first year of Portland's new system of government.
Right.
It hasn't come into play yet, but it is something that is provided for under the new system of government, but everybody kind of hated that idea. Also, it was probably more likely that the mayor would support Smith or Novick or Alana Pirtle-Ginney, so mm-hmm. it was also for her political aims that this would have happened. Anyway, it was rejected. People were like, I don't think it's a good idea or a good look necessarily.
We settle arguments in-house. Yeah.
We don't
need to bring them on.
We haven't spent like 14 hours debating this for us to then sue ourselves to get a judge to decide.
Yeah.
You know, that's, I mean,
kind of divine intervention, Greek style.
Yeah. Divine.
That's how they would, you know, wrap up any book, any Greek book. They'd be like, I think God came in and just sort of, you know, did the 7-6 tie-breaking vote.
Yeah, I think, well, I'm not a biblical scholar, but that sounds right.
Okay, not
I don't
the Bible.
Know.
I was talking about, like, you know, like the Odyssey.
Oh, Iliad. The Odyssey.
You know, a lot of situations
there. I'm not an Odyssean scholar either.
Mm-hmm.
But,
yeah, I don't see a bookshelf behind you. Kind of okay, interesting. Right.
Well, I keep the books outside the genius box, and when I'm allowed out,
okay, I don't understand why you would keep the book, because this is the box where we are geniuses, so it seemed like it would be helpful to have some like reference points.
Well, I guess I'll talk to my decorator. Anyway, can I hit you with my last two, and then we'll move on to
yes.
this?
Yes, no, please. I'm sorry. Scandal. I'm sorry to be you.
No, you're fine. It's all very congenial
here.
Stop, stop apologizing, Reed. I didn't know we'd devolve into insecurity by being in separate boxes. Okay.
Well, no, yeah. I mean, the solitary genius box then, you know, induces cabin fever with me.
Yeah, fair enough. The last two here, EPG Unleashed, what a new year of policy priorities could look like for District 2's Alana Pirtle-Ginney. Basically, she has not done any policy-ish her whole time in office because she's been wrangling the council.
Mm.
So that is something to watch. The other one I wrote, working 8-5, Council President Dunphy floats plans to cut down on council committees.
That's so silly.
9-5 reference.
Working 8-5.
Can you tell that I loved when I was a print journalist in college and could write these little headlines?
How would you be able to fit these headlines on a print document, though? They're so long.
The font is very small.
Oh, yeah.
But anything for the pun.
Serif or sans serif?
Serif, definitely.
Okay. You know, a sophisticated publication, clearly.
Thank you, yes. Well, Reed, there's a whole other layer to this.
Oh, is there?
The texting scandal. Do you want to
a two-layer cake?
A two-layer cake, if you will.
Sure. Well, yeah. So, meanwhile, during this whole debate over the council president, there were other people in attendance, including a name who maybe is not familiar to a lot of people, Brian Owendorf. So, real estate guy, CEO of BMO Commercial Real Estate. He is known for for about 5 or 10 years ago having a little scandal where he posted over 200 incendiary comments onto Oregon Live under an alias, and then was revealed that were lambasting then Mayor Sam Adams, John Kitzhaber, leftism in Portland. He also further ingratiated himself to the city by use of investor and representative for the great Block 216, which is where the
that's the Ritz-Carlton.
They shuffled out all of the food carts. They put in the Ritz-Carlton. They somehow weaseled around the inclusionary housing policy for Portland. Got out of requiring affordable housing in the building. Now they're maybe bankrupt, and the whole project is collapsing in flames, and they're still not going to give money to the city. Anyway, so, a charitable, philanthropic linchpin of the city. He was, during this whole process of bringing in a new mayor, there was a lot of... New president. Whoa. Sort of the mayor of the council, except that there is also a mayor.
Continue.
There was some debate, city council was, in particular, Councillor Murillo was bringing up some these racial and gender inequities within city council that was kind of woven into the debate around new council president. Councillor Murillo talking about her experience being on city council in a body that historically has barred women of color from being representatives. Talked about some comments that Eric Zimmerman made against Samir Kanal, who was one of the candidates.
They were nasty.
Eric Zimmerman talking about Samir Kanal's temperament making him not a good candidate for city council, and Councilor Murillo bringing up these are racial stereotypes that are people of color are held to these standards that white counselors are not held to in particular that this is defamatory racially charged language. During this debate, there was another private debate going on in the Brian Owendoff text chain. He was in a text chain, I guess, with a couple other people from what seems to kind of bring them all together. Is they're all members of Future Portland, or many are members of this Future Portland Action Fund, which seems to be in many ways, a kind of adoptive child to Althea,
Portland. It does seem to be sort of a further iteration of it. So yeah, he's talking to all of these people. He's actually flipping between multiple group chats, live racist texting what city council is talking about.
Uh-huh.
Mercury publishes all of this. Fascinatingly,
How do they get his texts? sophisticated data collection.
It wasn't leaked or anything. Somebody just took photos over his shoulder because he was racist live texting in council chamber with his brightness up and his font large.
He's got the glasses perched on the edge of his nose. He's got the font up to 60. It's 6 characters in every on the screen.
Sending the most racist text. Multiple group checks to say vile live tweeting, live texting, what is going on. So including in this chat, Vicki Payne, who's a former communication staffer for Multnomah County Commissioner Julia Brim Edwards, who was fired / resigned in disgrace because she was working for this political action committee, this PAC, while also being a comms staff. Mm-hmm. And so there was a conflict of interest thing. There's another community member for Future Portland, Talia Giardini. And he also texted often candidate, not often winner, Vadim Mazursky, but Mazursky, I don't think, responded, at least that the person who took the photos behind his shoulder saw. And the other wild thing is that the Mercury, this isn't the first time that the Mercury has had receipts of this, because Ohendorf in November was texting, it was opposed to the AI rental price fixing ban and was texting Dan Ryan while it was happening, and then Dan Ryan said what he was saying. And so he said what he was saying, and all of these counselors then are responding. The response from the people in the thread who were bashing, like, the irony is so deep of counselors of color on council speaking about their experience, speaking about becoming a part of this institution that has long excluded them and has long not, like, empowered them in all of these ways. And then there's literally people in the audience doing the exact thing that they're talking about. That the elite
in response
real estate
to it.
Developers, in response to what they're saying, are looping it back around and complaining that they're talking about it.
Yeah. Kind of an interesting dynamic there. Yeah.
Something of an Ouroboros eating its own tail. And then, so Dan Ryan in this, right, because it's not that Ohendorf was texting Dan Ryan at the time, but he has a history of texting Dan Ryan, mm-hmm. things like that. And in the original story, Dan Ryan gives a not very good response. He's like, well, I listen to everybody. It's very brave that
right.
people come up here and they want to
testify. Right, the Mercury reached out to Dan Ryan for response, given that he had historically had open ears, let's say, to Brian Ohendorf.
Right, and they got comments from all of the counselors who were mentioned as well, mm-hmm. and all of them were saying, this is kind of case in point, this is vile, we deserve an apology, basically. And then the story comes out, and Ryan is upset with his portrayal or the way that his comment came across, and then kind of ripped into the Mercury, and reporter Jeremiah Hayden, friend of the program, full disclosure, about that he didn't have enough information to give a good comment.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of like, I think, like, falsely characterizing the situation, yeah, that he was, like, not entirely informed, kind of forced to make a comment without full information. And then, yeah, like, then in a city council meeting, kind of, like, contextualize this all in, he has, like, this beautiful comment, honestly, that I think in many ways, like, it captures a lot of the techniques that you know, we all kind of use when we're faced with a situation that we can't quite squirrel out of. We're, you know, employing all the kind of, and this ties into the question that we'll ask later, we're employing all kind of the classic cliches just to kind of try to sweep up some support and some, like, pathos, empathy for ourselves. I just want to read a little bit of Councilor Ryan's commentary, and I've got some nice, like, backing music from Nate. I'm just going to be vulnerable with all of you and just say this. Since I've been receiving unnecessary, not fair hate today, I was contacted by the Mercury an hour before the deadline yesterday morning while I was in a committee meeting. Zero context on anything about text messages. The main question was, who do you talk to? I go, I talk to anyone that reaches out. That's my district and needs to talk to me about their opinion on the topic. That's all I said. That's why my quote in here is pretty ambiguous, because I got a very ambiguous statement. I could tell by others in that article that I served with. You probably got a lot more context than I did. Good for you. But I just need to say that, because it's not fair when you have to receive a reporter coming at you aggressively wanting a deadline. And since I always try not to do the no comment thing, I provide a comment. I don't really want any retort right now. I just have to say that I go high so often, but when there's lies that are coming out at you, you know, and then have to have the courage just to defend yourself because no one else will, it's my lived experience. I'm the only one that could say what I just did about what I experienced. Anyway, I don't appreciate any of those comments that I read. If I would have known what that was the article was about, I would have a different quote. I can see some nonverbal that's not trusting. That's not my problem.
And that would be them shaking their heads, basically, at what he's saying.
That's the nonverbal.
That's the nonverbal. They talk about the nonverbal a lot in council. But Yeah, great, great quote. I think he also at one point said that he wanted to give the reporter at the Mercury like reporter 101 or something.
I would love to, if he is doing that, I would love to attend.
Well, he has since apologized, because the Mercury came out and published all the emails exchanged where they explained the situation. They like asked, can we get 10 minutes with you?
They did actually explain the situation.
Sure, but what's it about? And then they give a greater description of like somebody was a power broker, essentially was saying all of this like racist stuff, and it's somebody that Ryan has spoken to before. We'd love to get 10 minutes. And then in the article, they also say like the rest of the counselors, like that they were trying to get 10 minutes to read the text over the phone to them so that they could comment about it. And since then, Dan Ryan has apologized and said, hey, mea culpa, my bad.
Hey, mea culpa. Hey, you know, I will say, if you're going to like try to portray events in a drastically different light than how they actually were, you want to make sure that there's no documentation of those events. That's just kind of helpful advice for anyone out there who is trying to weasel out of a similar situation. I would also just, you know, kind of use that Dan Ryan statement as sort of a template, just sort of add in little pieces, you know, change a couple lines, but it's right there.
Well, great structure. He's apologized and he condemned the Owendorf name calling, as he puts it.
Yeah.
The Owendorf name calling.
A lot of name calling. That's sort of a
name calling is one way to say it. I think
maybe a little toothless of a critique there, Dan.
I mean, he's back in the this was wrong, so that's good.
That is good. And he's gotten to like it's classic schoolyard just shenanigans name calling.
Yeah. I don't
tie on the shoelaces together.
But that's a little bit about what's been going on with City Council.
Hmm.
Reed, are we ready to go to a little musical break, do you think?
Oh, I guess so.
Do you want to tell us about what this new music, this theme, this break we're going to have is?
Well, I was in the studio, different studio, not a Genius Box, but more of like a music, sounds, and noises box. I decided to draft up a new theme song for the show. I love the theme song, don't get me wrong. I can see Althea's sending daggers into my face because this is one of her favorite songs.
It's not. It's fine.
But
I
thought, okay, what if we just kind of try a different, you know, melange of sounds, have something that's more like, more embodies the show. And so my friend Tony and I, we threw together a little ditty. I think it really encapsulates the show. It's informative. It is
a demo version right now.
It is a demo version. So but this is sort of
the world debut right now.
This is kind of the chopped and screwed version, and we'll come back and we'll do a more refined, tasteful, maybe some strings. But
you, give us a quick reset before we go, if you don't mind.
You are listening to KBOO 90.7. This is the Genius Box. My name is Reed. I'm here kind of ethereally with Althea.
Hello.
Got Nate on the ones and twos. We've got you perched next to the old-timey radio with your whole family.
And here our new theme song.
And here is our new theme song.
on the show.
Okay.
Yes, yes.
So the actual song is going to be about four times that long.
Oh boy.
I had a lot more lyrics because I wanted to draw in a lot of like current events. So I tie in every single article that we've ever talked about. Kind of like, you know, We Didn't Start the Fire style.
I'm into that. And we need a new We Didn't Start the Fire. I think the last one was a couple years ago. It's always good to bring that back up.
Yeah, a couple years ago.
Well, listen, we're back here in the Genius Box.
Oh, yeah.
We are in the second half of the show here. Mm-hmm. We're going to be starting our call-in segment in just a moment. I'm going to tell you our call-in segment, and then we're going to play a little something else for you to get ready to, you know, hit the numbers on your phone.
Hit the ones and twos.
The ones and twos. And the threes, because there is a three in our
There's
phone
a five
number.
And a two and an eight and a There's seven.
We'll tell you all the numbers in a minute, but we...
But not in order.
Not in order. We want to talk about cliches. Like, what is your favorite or least favorite cliches? We talked a lot about cliches today. Some of in the Ryan speech, in many of the headlines that I wrote, we're talking cliches. What's your favorite? What's your least favorite? Give us a call, 503-231-8187. Now, while you're doing that, we are debuting a special new segment on Genius Box called Out of the Box. We'll speak for itself.
I might create another theme song also for Out of the Box. We'll have a series of theme songs for every single segment.
Maybe we should actually change the show to just being theme songs.
That's actually my dream. Like I said, it's just a music show.
Yeah. Oh, well, I guess we have a lot of those on the station. We might have to keep doing what we're doing. All right, let's hear it. Out of the Box.
On Saturday, January 11th, Althea and Reed were let out of the Genius Box to attend a Major League table tennis match between the Portland Paddlers and the Atlanta Blazers.
Welcome, welcome to Major League Table Tennis.
There is a glaring disproportionality between the entire expanse of the field and the tininess of the court.
But I expect we're going to see they need room to maneuver, you know? I think this isn't garage style ping pong where you, you know, run into your grandpa's skis.
No, this is like Texas style ping pong. Everything's bigger in the Oregon Convention Center.
Reed, quick question. How do you feel about the Atlanta team being called the Blazers?
I think it was a major oversight by the Portland team to have not picked that as a name.
I'm struggling a little bit.
You can see it on his face.
Match point. Nordberg looks a little tense.
Oh. And he puts it long.
There are only a few rules here that we all need to know about a Major League Table Tennis. The most important rule is that here at Major League Table Tennis, we do not have to win by two. So we're going to play every game to 11. But if you don't have to win by two, there is an opportunity for us to be tied up. If we are tied 10-10 at any point today, we like to call that a golden point.
And with that,
All right, everybody, this is it. Get loud and sail with me.
Golden points.
Kiwi, I'd love to steal you for just a second because... what an incredible opportunity. This is your first time going up against Portland as an opponent. You're in your home. You have so many friends and family in the crowd. Talk to me about what you're feeling.
I love you too, man. Hey, I just want to say thanks to everyone cheering for us and cheering for me. Come on, give me some noise! Yeah, all my students over there. Yeah, I just want to say, hey, this is my core!
Hi, I'm Carrie Booth. I'm a bike rider and ping pong fan. I have perfected my own version of the ping pong game. I call it the friendly volley.
Oh, okay.
The goal is to always keep it on the table, keep it in play, and get so relaxed with your partner that you can chat.
Oh. Point of the game, perhaps.
Wow.
A bludgeoning point.
Just any adjective. Just wait. Compared to your friendly volley, there's a lot of getting it off the table, people hitting the ground even.
Oh, man, yeah, they're really, they're sweating. They're sweating so much. I found it interesting. Some of the players are making interesting grunts and noises and let's goes, and they stomp when they serve.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's a lot of strategy that I'm noticing.
I was very surprised to see how, you know, turned around they are when they're
some
serving.
Some of those sideways serves,
and
yeah.
You don't, like, the eye line, they're almost not even looking.
Right, right.
But their reaction time is so good that they know if it was good or bad.
Right, it's so
before
fast.
Before the audience knows.
Yeah, yeah.
You got to know we're getting into the meat of the match. Both players now adopting headbands. I'm using that as a metric of quality. And
only one person had a headband.
Only one person a headband.
Doubles? One headband, I think.
One headband still. Now suddenly a jarring rise in the number of headbands being used.
And I will say, styled differently. One of them under the hair, the other one over the hair.
I'm kind of a...
What would you do? You got a synopsis.
I'm a classic under the hair kind of guy. I feel like that's like, it's kind of that, got that swagger.
Wow!
And we're tied up 10-10. You know what that means?
You know what that means?
Get loud and say it with me now. Golden points.
Blow out the speakers.
Yeah, blow your eardrums.
Atlanta player hit it about as hard as one could hit a featherweight ping pong ball. Deftly returned by the Portland player right in his face, humiliating. Game point, Portland. The entire atmosphere in this building has shifted like on a dime. Portland fans down the dumps before. A lot of people looking down. A lot of crying. People staring into space absently.
One more game.
Of course, they still have to play another game of this, and there's not really been nothing but decided. But you can just feel sort of a shift in the crowd. A lot more hopeful. People.
Absolutely.
A lot more smiles. Children laughing.
Great gameplay will do that to you.
That's what a single point can do in this kind of razor-thin margin edge game like table tennis. Three golden points, all to Portland. You gotta think the stars are aligned in our favor tonight. There's something about the
God in this convention center.
There is God in this convention center.
My name is Stephen Smith.
Okay, what'd you think?
It was such a great experience, great atmosphere. It was my first professional ping pong match of my life, and the stands were full, and we were cheering. We were on the edge of our seats. It was great.
And you're coming back tomorrow, you said?
Oh, yeah, 11 a.m.
We're back.
Out of the box.
Out of the box and back into the box. That might have been the first radio-hosted paddle event, tennis racket paddle event. Maybe I've never turn on the radio and you hear football, but you never hear tennis where they're he hit the ball and then the other guy hit the ball and then the running hit the ball and the other person hit the ball and the ball is now currently about to be hit and now it's been hit and the person's about to hit it,
and that was one of the hits that they did just then.
But it's a it's kind of dynamic, honestly.
We'll have people
can call
it a flavor of how out of the box was going. Okay. We're back in the Genius Box.
Oh, yeah.
I'm Althea. I'm here with Reed.
Hello.
We are in the call-in section of the program. Would you like to call and talk with us? Please do. 503-231-8187. We want to know, what is your favorite or least favorite cliche? Mm. What are you hearing way too much? What has become so trite to you? I know that you have an answer to this. 503-231-8187.
Oh, and just for those people that were waiting with bated breath after that segment, they had their blood pressure boiled up by the dynamic nature of the show. The Portland team won. Just want to get that out there. They beat the Blazers, which normally beat the Blazers. Visceral reaction to that statement. I'm you know, shedding tears. I'm getting delirious. No, that's good in the sport of table tennis. It kind of turns the tables in many ways. We hate the Blazers. No, we don't hate the Blazers, but we root against the Blazers.
The only time you're allowed to do that in Portland is during table tennis.
That's where it makes its name. And it's a major league sport. It's called Major League Table Tennis. So, you know, you got to take it seriously. It didn't get captured in the audio, which is interesting. Kind of like a Stalinist edit. But there, you could tell it was such a professional sport because of the amount of monitors that were being used in the court, in the convention center. There were probably 30 monitors, maybe 15 people.
Yeah. And there was a number of bald gentlemen sitting at a tall table looking at computers. Mm-hmm. So
intently looking at computers. Like something on the computer is much more important than the game being played. Mm-hmm. And the game was very exciting.
We were grateful to be let out for this particular instance.
They had instant replay. They had the ability to recall the past at the press of a button.
Wow.
Does that not bring you to your knees, Portland?
I want to move on.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Let's go to the cliche. Let's talk. Come on.
I'm just excited. This is like the one time I get to talk about sport.
Yeah. Well, it's over. I edited it. You don't get to think about it anymore. We're talking about cliches.
That's right.
Do you have a favorite or least favorite cliche?
I mean, I will have to say the Dan Ryan comment kind of hitting some of the best ones. It's the phrase, it's my lived experience, and then like clarifying it. I'm the only one that could say what I just did about what I experienced.
Right.
My
lived experience of not responding to an email properly, to be clear, in that particular
I mean, that is true. Only I could explain why I did that completely, like, indescribably strange thing.
Yeah,
exactly.
It was all me.
Why I did that major L.
It was my doing. Folks, if you want to call in, what is your favorite or least favorite cliche? 503-231-8187. I have a cliche-related story that I am often telling because we talk about it when I am teaching people how to write for the newscast.
Oh.
But when I was in seventh grade, my teacher was very anti-cliche. Shout out Mr. Johnson. He would say...
Okay.
Never say that something stuck out like a sore thumb. Say that it stuck out like a zit on an otherwise unblemished nose. But he said it so many times that itself
it
became
was a cliche. Yeah.
And we were like, oh, brother, not the zit on the unblemished nose thing again.
What does that say that the sore thumb doesn't say? I will say, like, I've never really seen someone stick out a sore thumb, so... It is not the thing that I immediately associate with sticking out.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that's probably why.
I would say like...
Some cliches and idioms at least ought to be updated with current terminology.
What about sticking out...
Because it can be so inaccessible.
Yeah. It probably that was back in the day when people were like stubbing their thumb a lot more. And then they also...
That's a back-in-the-day characteristic.
Back in the day, yeah, people stubbing their thumbs, and then there was also a lack of awareness about stub thumbs, so people were, like, right. being more, like, dramatic with, like, hey, I am actually one of those who has a sore thumb.
And you're sticking out, brother.
No, I would say probably the best way to describe that would be, it is sticking out like a stick out of a uniform object with no edges.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
or because then like, you were like, that literally is sticking out.
That's true. That's true. You got double meaning on that. Mm-hmm. I would also say maybe, but I guess the nice thing about sore thumb is that it's very succinct. But thinking about like sticking out, it's like sticking out, you know, when there's like a car that has a non like white or black color, you know. Interesting stuff.
What if you just say, if you want a more succinct point, you just say it's sticking out like thumb.
It's sticking out like thumb. Because you can stick
like,
your thumb out.
Stick out thumb.
Great, great point. We have Alan Robb on the line. Good morning, Alan.
Alan, yes. Hi, good morning. Happy New Year. It's nice to hear some reference to table tennis or ping pong, a game I played a lot in my youth and childhood, and we had a table at my home. So I'm glad that now with Mardi Supreme, I expect there'll be some places in Portland where you could shoot pool and also play ping pong. So that's great. What is this dismissive comment about the Blazers? The Blazers are not doing too well, but it's fun to have a team with all the craziness of professional sports and ownership and all that. And there are a lot of athletes, including basketball players, that have, you know, stood up for what's right, whether it's the coach of the San Francisco, the Golden State Warriors, who's come out very cold what happened with Rene Good murder. There are a lot of athletes. There's a long tradition of coaches, athletes, you know, standing up for human rights, resisting oppression. So we shouldn't be so dismissive of athletes and sports. As far as cliches, you know, in the grand scale of human suffering and human life, I can't invest too much energy in hating any cliche, but sometimes when I hear it's all good, I cringe. There are so many blessings in life. Just being alive is a blessing. I just walked with our wonderful four-legged family members in Forest Park. It was kind of misty and dreamy. There's so many blessings, but somebody saying it's all good when there, you know, there's genocide here and murder of protesters in Iran and suffering here and homelessness, that gets under my skin. The other thing that I'm not too in favor of is the use of like. She said like it was like, I don't know, maybe I'm too old or something, but that word should be used in moderation. So those are my two tiny, tiny pet peeves. And what are your favorite cliches that you'd like to send people to Devil's Island for using? Are there any such cliches?
Well, I wouldn't want to send anyone to Devil's Island for the use of cliches.
Or
I think that
Guantanamo
maybe...
or alligator hell in Florida or whatever.
I appreciate the it's all good. I think like for me, what captures it for me is like it is kind of like glib when it doesn't really, yeah, like kind of to your point, there's many things to be like, yeah, blessed, to feel blessed about in the world, or like to really like revere, and yeah, like to encapsulate that all in just like a, yeah, an all-inclusive statement that seems to generalize, right, both the good and in doing so capturing a lot of things in the world that are not, should not be just like blanket captured by, you know, in goodness.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's
yeah.
And
I'll go on.
No, please.
Yeah, I've been reading some really powerful accounts, books that just came out about Gaza, and in one of them, a young woman journalist writes about, you know, her life there, and she actually refers to the fact that in the West, you know, people tell you, she, when she was in the West, she comes from a middle class family. Her you know, her mom was the head of one of the heads of the American International School in Gaza, and she traveled in the West. She was in Cyprus, and she says people always say, you know, you could follow your dreams, you could do whatever you want, but that, according to her, you know, it's not the reality for many people in the world. So that phrase a little bit, but there is a lot to be thankful for. There's no doubt about that. So, well, I'll get off the phone so other people could call and like. I hope you have like a really like good day. Like, so be well. Thank you for the show.
Thank you, Alon.
Thank you so much for calling. Yeah.
And thank you. I do appreciate Oh, sorry. No, go on, Althea.
Well, I was going to mention, okay, two things. One, to be clear, the Atlanta Major League Table Tennis team is called the Blazers. Mm. There's the Atlanta Blazers, which is why we were saying this. The only reason you can root against the Blazers in Portland is if it's the Atlanta team. The Portland team is called the Paddlers. No disrespect to our great Trailblazer team, who is going to space, I assume. Also, I think the like
space
issue, the like, the you're not the only one in our audience who finds those perturbing. It is that verbal filler people, you insert them because you have a thought, but you maybe your brain is not totally caught up to your mouth, and we chuck them in there, and it's very common, I think, to go upstream of the problem would be to
allow people
time. Well, oh, to be silent, sure. Say nothing, and then you can't say anything wrong. That is really dial that in. But I think allowing people time to form a thought and allowing them to speak without feeling like they're going to get cut off is a good way to maybe train the like out of your tone. I will say, not that I'm perfect about it. The only way that I was insofar as I have been able to do it, take some of those verbal fillers out, it was because I was being edited and produced by somebody else who was on my case about saying it. Shout out Lenita Duke, telling me you say this all the time, you got to stop.
My one last addition is that we also don't necessarily want to criticize the Atlanta Blazers. They have, in fact, two former Portland players, Zhiwei, who was captured in that.
Zhiwei Shaw.
And then Rachel Sung. So we're kind of seeding the Atlanta team with Portland players and potentially setting ourselves up for kind of a palace coup in recapturing a team. I can see it. We got the mascot already. We just need to change the city. So kind of working on that one. So my criticism, I'm withholding my criticism of the Atlanta Blazers because I am seeing the possibility for a little coup action.
Right. Totally. Folks, if you want to call in, we got time. We're talking cliches. 503-231-8187.
And I believe we have Tawasi on the line. Hello, Tawasi.
Good morning. Hey, I have two cliches. I have the sad cliches that make me a little bit unhappy, and I've got the good cliches that bring me a lot of joy. So the bad cliches would be the term immigrant, because it's used as a catch-all when we actually mean asylum seeker, refugee, migrant worker, settler colonizer, and obviously, immigrant. It's just a cliche that immigrants are violent. We have all the data that shows they're actually far less violent than, say, for instance, straight white men. But anyway, the cliche of immigrant gets under my skin because it doesn't do justice to all of the different varieties of people who come here for a variety of reasons or go anywhere for a variety of reasons. The other one that, and sadly this is a dig at the Blazers, I mean, for you guys it's sad. I think it's great. So have you ever heard of the Ulican? You know what an Ulican is?
No.
It's a smelt fish. It's a very small keystone species. It's like a fish that's about the size of one of your fingers, your largest finger. And it runs very, very heavily north of here in the Fraser River. It's the highest fat fish in this area, the smelt fish, or the Ulican, as we call it. So the cliche of the Oregon Trail and the Trailblazers is just some whitewashed history rewriting, because there's historical evidence of the Ulican Trail originating here on the West Coast, where Ulican were bartered as far east as the Great Lakes. So the Ulican Trail brought fish from the West Coast to the East and brought immigrants, refugees, farm workers, migrants, settler colonizers from the East to the West. Mm. So the Trailblazers never blazed a thing. The trails have been here for thousands of years. It's just a glad handing and back patting that settler colonizers do to make little kids feel good about land theft and genocide. So with all due respect, EFF the Blazers. It's a racist trope, and I hate it. So now let's double back to the feel-good cliches because I really wanted to end on a happy note. There's this awesome song by a guy named MGK, and it's called Cliché. You guys may or may not have the rights to play it, but it's just like this love song, and he's asking his girlfriend if she's going to wait for him, and it's just like, you know, everything that I love about love is so cliche, and it's just encapsulated in this song. So if you have some time, if you have the rights, or if you're just a listener, check it out. MGK, the song is called Cliche. Your name.
Thank you, Tawasi.
On your name is in neon lights in the sky when darkness surrounds us. Let's leave this town, get married, go to Vegas, and create nostalgia.
Thank you, Tawasi. Hey,
you're welcome.
Appreciate
hey,
it, yeah.
Remember the Ulican Trail. Don't let them trick you into believing the Oregon Trail.
Yes, and for listeners, Ulican, and I believe I found the right word, E-U-L-A-C-H-O-N is how it's sort of...
transliterated.
Transliterated, exactly.
We also spell Thank you it to us. O-O-L-I-K-I-N. Ulican.
O-O-L-I-K-I-N. Yeah, thank you, Tawasi.
Appreciate you. One of the things that Tawasi was talking about reminded me about some of my thinking about like cliches and idioms and things like that is that they fill in for when we could just say what we mean or be more descriptive. That definitely comes up. Also, I've been somebody who I was learning French and trying to speak French to French speakers. You realize when you're trying to translate things in your head how much of my speech of what I intended to say in English was based in idioms or references to things. And I ended up having to do more mental work and understanding that a lot of our most rote cliches and in the way that we've talked about some of it are not as accessible if you're coming at English from a second language.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I can speak to that. I mean, I speak pretty fluent German, but the one thing that always kind of vexes me is a lot of the cliche usage. I mean, I appreciate Tawasi kind of putting the, you know, like sad, tiresome cliches, good cliches, like to kind of make that distinction, because there are like, I think there are universals in how the universal thing about cliches is that it like captures a lot of like general or sort of like aggregate ways of thinking about the world, which can be like, you know, as like Tawasi's talking about, like, you know, very, very cruel, like with the use of like immigrant and sort of like encapsulating, like, especially like European American sort of like hyperfixation on this idea of like where you come from. And then, like the good as well, like you have so many cliches about like love and things like that, that people really grasp onto because these are like almost very like universal feelings that, you kind of just, yeah. You share the sensation and then they're like encapsulated in words and like they're, that is, a very like unifying sort of concept or.
Maybe that's the take home for the audience. Try to write something without a cliche. See what happens.
The
you can get really hung up on that even just there.
the it's like tomato tomato.
Well, it's not tomato in my experience, but tomato. I think that we are going to have to leave things here. I want to thank everybody who called. Thank you everybody who listened.
Thanks to everyone.
You want to do
thanks to everyone who didn't call and to those callers we didn't get to and also those people who didn't listen. We still appreciate you.
You're probably doing something else.
Probably doing something else.
And we want to say thank you also to Nate, our engineer. Thank you to Reed. Appreciating everybody. I hope everybody takes care of themselves this weekend. Stay tuned to KBOO. We've got Veterans Voice coming up next. We'll see you next week.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
for the show.
This is Daniela from STEM Champ. You're listening to KBOO Portland.
I'm Doug McVeigh, host of Free Culture Radio. Every month, we bring you 30 minutes of news and information about people who use drugs, as we discuss topics like safe supply, safe consumption.